Welcome back. It's a Thursday, the fourth day of January 2024. I'm your host, Mark Call. And when I looked at the news today and tried to decide what to put together for this half-hour show, I couldn't help but notice that most of the really interesting stuff had to do with warnings and indications that things aren't what they seem, as if we didn't already know that, but also, more importantly, what direction they might be pointing. So we'll get there in short order, but I couldn't help but think that this might therefore be a good day to take a look at some of the politics surrounding part of the reason, at least, why we're being told certain things and not told other things, and how that might help to clarify what we're fixing to talk about, again, in just a few minutes. I'll start with this story. Actually, the first couple are all from the leftist mouthpiece that at least tries to get a bit of it more right than the WAPO New York Times and other criminally negligent networks ever managed to. That's the Daily Mail out of the UK. They have a piece that actually raised my eyebrows this morning, entitled, Trump Has Been Endorsed by the Entire House Republican Leadership. Yeah, including the rhinos. The chief whip, Tom Emmer, has completed the ex-president's clean sweep, it says, of senior GOP members after the former president, yeah, the elected president, actually, sank that fellow's speaker's bid with a rhino attack. He called Emmer out, in other words. So, House Majority Whip Tom Emmer has joined his colleagues in backing the former president, the same guy who helped to sink his own bid for the speakership, and arguably rightfully so. This after House Majority Leader Steve Scalise of Louisiana gave his own nod to the elected president, and just days before the Iowa caucuses kick off the 2024 rigged election process. Some of us folks might suggest it's already been kicked to the curb. Said Emmer on X, quote, Democrats have made clear they'll use every tool in their arsenal to try and keep Joe Biden and his failed policies in power. We can't let them. It's time for Republicans to unite behind our party's clear frontrunner, which is why I am proud today to endorse Donald J. Trump for president, unquote. And the story reiterates that this unflinching statement of support came after and despite Trump torpedoed that guy's own bid to move up during the chaotic effort to find a replacement for the disastrous Kevin McCarthy, who has also now endorsed Trump. So is this amazing, almost unbelievably good news, or does something kind of trigger your spidey sense here, folks? In other words, take a deep breath and see if you smell anything. At a minimum, pay close attention, and I guess the scriptural advice from Matthew 24 is always apropos, see that you are not deceived. Item, maybe this is related, courtesy of Jack Phillips and the Epoch Times, a federal judge in the People's Republic of California, can you believe it, has dismissed a lawsuit that sought to keep the elected president, Donald Trump, off the Republican primary ballot there. And on Wednesday, the Clinton-appointed District Judge David Carter not only granted that motion to dismiss the lawsuit, but, quote, with prejudice, meaning it can't be submitted again to the same court. But maybe, folks, this shouldn't surprise us. Even the openly communist government of California, including its wannabe CCP buddy dictator, Gavin Gruesome Newsom, has described these bogus challenges as, quote, a political distraction. Which really means that even he gets it. They're so transparent that they're pissing too many people off, even among their so-called allies, and waking them up to the fact that this election has been rigged before it ever even started. But this at least gives us a hint as to how big the ruse is. The Trump campaign and their statement hailed the decision, noting that federal courts in, listen to this list, West Virginia, New Hampshire, Florida, Arizona, and Rhode Island, along with state courts in Minnesota and Michigan, have also dismissed similar, equally transparent attempts to use lawfare to rig the elections there. And I guess, speaking of distractions and things that should have come out a long time ago, hey, the list there is legion, isn't it? This one, too, from the Daily Mail. The A list, it says, of stars, politicians, and leading figures, sick, named in the Jeffrey Epstein files. Yes, at long last, at least part of it, has been released, and the way that it's been done arguably shouldn't surprise anybody. But at least it's giving Joe Public a brief glimpse into why the American legal system is such a circus. Sometimes you'll hear the process called discovery mud fights, and it boils down to two primary weapons, both used by the legal system against its enemies, the clients and those being victimized by the system. And all too often, as it turns out, regardless of which side they're on. One aspect is called unreasonably burdensome document demands for discovery. In other words, ask for everything you can possibly think of and a whole lot more, and bankrupt those people that are forced then to find them and put them up or face charges. One obvious example, the most recent case to destroy Alex Jones. Demand things that don't even exist, and then nail him when he can't produce them, because, ha-ha, you knew they didn't exist to begin with. But that was never the point, right? It's about destroying the enemy. first with ridiculous numbers of hours of legal fees, and then the Orwellian puppet press, which doesn't care that the documents never existed. They'll drink your Kool-Aid and go after them anyway. But the other side of the coin is no less insidious, and that's the one we see on display today. The defense is often looking for one specific document, or one video, or whatever the case may be. Hey, you probably won't deliver that, at least not the first dozen or so times they ask. But eventually, when it becomes unavoidable, yeah, you deliver it, along with three semi-tractor trailer loads of other documents that they didn't ask for. But guess what? It's in there somewhere. You better sort through all of those things and find it. The needle in the haystack looks trivial by comparison. You'll spend a fortune if you manage to find it at all, and that's the intent. Well, that's kind of what we're seeing today. Some of the Epstein documents, long promised, have finally been released. The first tranche was unsealed overnight. More are set to be released on what the Daily Mail calls a rolling basis later on. But for now, the point seems to be to bury the lead and the culprits in the massive 1,000-page document and a whole bunch of other names that have nothing to do with the real culprits. The key, folks, lies in the distinction, subtle sometimes, but at least they actually do get around to pointing this out, between mentioned in the documents and featured prominently, or worse. For example, the list of what the Daily Mail calls high-profile people is as follows, quote, Prince Andrew, Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, Al Gore, Kevin Spacey, and Stephen Hawking were all included in evidence filings, unquote. Actors Leonardo DiCaprio, Kate Blanchett, Cameron Diaz, and Bruce Willis are also in there, along with model Naomi Campbell. Now, you read on and you see this. None of them, it says, have been accused of any involvement in Epstein's crimes, but Epstein was a name dropper, said Joanna Schoberg in the evidence released overnight. She was clear that she'd never met them. So it says a list of 170 names, find the needle in that haystack, are now set to be made public following the U.S. judge's order last month. The first tranche has been released and more are coming. However, it says, the inclusion of a name does not necessarily mean that they are accused of any wrongdoing, with some names simply put there by witnesses who denied meeting them. The Daily Mail's got lots and lots of pictures of all of these people. You got to read through the article, though, to see which actually matter and which should be in there, which are just there for clickbait. Or, again, worse. Being a British tabloid, of course, they start with Prince Andrew, who is accused of all kinds of nastiness, and as a follow-up piece from the same source says, this is the final nail in the coffin for the prince. The bombshell Epstein filed about the underage orgy revelations will no doubt torpedo any hope that the scandal-hit Duke of York has of returning to royal duties, say various experts. There seems to be a whole lot of smoke and fire on that score. And how about that credibly accused rapist president? He's number two in the list here. On that known scumbag score, and yeah, folks, I'm admitting a bit of a bias here, the Daily Mail says the following, and I quote, there are also mentions in the documents of Jeffrey Epstein's past friendship with former U.S. President Bill Clinton, who is not accused of any wrongdoing, unquote. At least, well, not right here. Jeffrey Epstein, it continues, claimed that Bill Clinton, quote, liked them young, said Joanna Schoberg to lawyers, which probably doesn't surprise anyone who's ever heard the term bimbo eruption, the name Monica Lewinsky, and why the late Muammar Gaddafi once noted he had to wait outside the Oval Office for several extra minutes for Bill to take care of business, or the famous quotation from one of his numerous victims, quote, better put some ice on that. But that seems to have been her only contact with him. Maybe he just liked him in blue. As for number three on the list, Donald Trump, who gets headline treatment but doesn't seem to really figure very well, the story way down deep says that Epstein accuser Joanna Schoberg said that she and Virginia Jeffrey had flown with Jeffrey Epstein to New York on his private jet, a.k.a. the Lolita Express. On the way to New York, Schoberg testified, Epstein's jet had to divert to Atlantic City, New Jersey because of bad weather. And all the story has to say about it is that upon hearing the change of plans, Schoberg recalled Epstein saying, great, we'll call up Trump and go to the casino. Schoberg wasn't asked if they'd met with Trump that night, but later in her testimony, she said she was never asked to give Trump a massage. Kind of a yawner. And this, too, in her deposition, says the Daily Mail, Jeffrey herself said that the summer she turned 17, she was lured away from a job as a spa attendant at Trump's Mar-a-Lago club, where she ended up becoming instead a masseuse for Jeffrey Epstein, a job that she said then involved performing sexual acts. Notably, I don't see anything in this piece that indicates that she was ever asked whether she wished she'd turned down that wonderful offer. Famous physicist, the late Stephen Hawking, is on the list. There's a picture of him sitting there mostly paralyzed in his wheelchair at Jeffrey Epstein's pedophile island in 2006. Their caption says, at a barbecue, other allegations say it was an underage orgy. I gotta ask, could he have really even done anything other than watch? And unless they read his monitor, how would they even know whether he wanted to be there or not? I guess the point I'm making is that unless you read through the details associated with these things and ignore the headlines, sometimes it's really tough to get to the truth, and I can't help but think that's part of the point. Here is, for example, a bit of the transcript that the Daily Mail at least does include, way down deep in the piece, about the aforementioned Cate Blanchett, Cameron Diaz, and Bruce Willis. The question was, I saw one press report saying you'd met Cate Blanchett or Leonardo DiCaprio. No, she said, I didn't meet him. When I spoke about them, it was when I was massaging him and he would get off. In other words, referring to the chief pedophile himself, the late Jeffrey Epstein, and no, folks, he didn't kill himself in that prison cell. At one time, he would say things like, oh, that was Leonardo, or that was Cate Blanchett, or Bruce Willis, that kind of thing. Question. So, name dropping? Answer, yes. So, the question was asked, you had not met Cate Blanchett or Leonardo DiCaprio? Answer, no, I have not. Would you remember if you had? Well, I hope I would remember. Did you meet Cameron Diaz? No. By the way, she didn't meet Kevin Spacey either, although other testimony from a whole lot of other people, mostly younger men, says they certainly did. All of which, folks, simply doesn't prove much of anything specific with respect to them, one way or another. But they got big pictures in this piece, a lot like some who are in here and really were guilty. And when you put it all in context, step back and take a good hard look at what we're seeing here, you can't help but wonder, why didn't we get this kind of coverage, say, before the rigged 2020 election, of the crackhead, whoring, pimping son of the big guy, including not only lots and lots and lots of pictures, but emails and evidence of other high crimes and misdemeanors, up to and including treason? And one thing's for sure, he certainly had a lot better protection than Epstein did. We'll follow that up with one more story that's a sign of the economic times, where drone and missile attacks by Yemen's Iranian-backed Houthi militants on commercial vessels in one of the world's busiest shipping lanes are being blamed for a surge in spot container rates by a full 173% over recent weeks. Bloomberg cites data from Freightos, a cargo booking and payment platform, showing that the spot rate for a 40-foot container from Asia to northern Europe, since it now has to go around the southern tip of Africa and the Cape of Good Hope, has jumped 173% since only mid-December. There are actually several warnings today that I've been working up to, but probably the premier among them comes from John Anisha Whitehead. It's been repeated on a number of places. I usually see it on LouRockwell.com. Leo Holman has it up as well. But it begins with a reference to a Twilight Zone episode, courtesy of the late, great Rod Serling. I remember this one. When I was a kid, I saw it, even though it didn't quite make as much sense to me as it would now. The monsters are due on Maple Street, it was called. And he asked this question. Will 2024 be the year that the deep states exercise in controlled chaos, like Rod Serling predicted so many decades before, finally gives way to an apocalyptic dismantling of our constitutional republic? Or, as he puts it, and I would hardly agree, what's left of it? All the signs, though, seem to point in that direction, because for years now, Big Brother has been pushing us to the brink of national nervous breakdown. And that breakdown, triggered by polarizing circus politics, media-fed mass hysteria, militarization, and militainment, i.e. the selling of war and violence as if it was entertainment, and a sense of hopelessness and powerlessness in the face of growing corruption, the government's alienation from its populace, an economy that has much of the population struggling to get by, and that, of course, folks, is by design. All of this, he says, has manifested itself in the polarized, manipulated mayhem, madness, and tyranny that is life in the American police state today. Why, he asks, is Big Brother and its deep state engineering this societal madness? What's in it for the government? What's playing out before us, he suggests, is a chilling lesson in social engineering, socialist engineering, really, that keeps the populace fixated on circus politics and conveniently timed spectacles, and distracted from focusing too closely on the Big Brother power grabs that continue to go on in plain sight. while at the same time it's incapable of standing united in defense of our freedoms. It's not conspiratorial, he suggests. It's a power play. Back to Rod Serling, the creator of The Twilight Zone, who he suggests understood the dynamics behind this power play. In that episode, The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, Serling imagined a world in which the powers that be carried out a social experiment to see how long it would take before the members of the small American neighborhood, frightened by the sudden loss of electric power and caught up in fears of the unknown, boy, how's that for prescient, folks, will transform itself into an irrational mob and turn on each other. Answer, it doesn't take long at all. Likewise, in the recent Netflix film, the apocalyptic thriller, courtesy this time of the Barack Hussein Obama crime family, entitled Leave the World Behind, unexplained crises lead to a technological blackout that leaves the populace disconnected, disoriented, isolated, suspicious, and under attack from mysterious ailments and, of course, each other. And as one of its characters speculates, the culprit behind the escalating catastrophes, which range from Wi-Fi outages and mysterious health ailments to cities under siege from rogue forces, might be the result of a military campaign intended to destabilize a nation by forcing the people to turn against each other. Well, says Whitehead, it's not really so far-flung a scenario when you consider some of the many ways Big Brother has already gotten the ability to manufacture crises in order to sow fear, fuel hysteria, destabilize the nation, and institute martial law. Now, he's going to go through a list here, but up front, I can't help but note, there are those who would claim, and once upon a time I would have been among them, that government is largely incompetent at doing anything, to which all I have to qualify now is, well, anything productive. But when it comes to destruction, remember, the adversary, and guess who they're serving here, comes but to steal, kill, and destroy. And that, folks, they've shown they are really blankety-blanking good at. Okay, here's Whitehead's list. 1, the government has the tools and the know-how to manufacture health crises. Yep, that's been clear since long before the COVID-1984 lockdown and two-part bioweapon that is still killing people by the millions. Early in Fauci's career, they were creating lethal viruses and unleashing them on an unsuspecting public. Another item in his list is that the government has the tools and the know-how to manufacture civil unrest and political upheaval. Since the days of J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI has been using agents provocateurs to infiltrate activist groups and, quote, expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, and otherwise neutralize them, or use them as the case may be. Third item in the list is that Big Brother has the tools and the know-how to manufacture economic instability. Gee, do you think? Come on. They've been manufacturing currency and with it economic instability, including but not limited to inflation, for over a century now. Eventually it'll come apart, but not before they profit massively on the way down, too. How about this one? The government has the tools and the know-how to manufacture environmental disasters. Developed in 1947, notes Whitehead, Project Cirrus was an early precursor to HAARP, the high-altitude active auroral research project, and Big Brother's weather-altering agency, which attempted to disable a hurricane as it was moving out to sea. And instead of weakening the storm, the government was able to steer it straight into Georgia, resulting in millions of dollars of damaged properties. And guess what? Some suggest, and I would be among those who certainly see the evidence here, they've been doing it ever since. But that's not all. Item, the government has the tools and the know-how to manufacture communications blackouts. There are things like the internet and cell phone kill switches, which enable Big Brother to shut down communications at a moment's notice. It's a practice that's been used in the U.S. For example, in 2005, cell service was disabled in 4 major New York tunnels, allegedly to avert potential bomb detonations via cell phone. In 2009, those attending the Obama regime inauguration had their signals blocked, again, at least allegedly for the same reasons. And in 2011, San Francisco commuters saw their cell phone signals shut down, this time to thwart possible protests associated with a police shooting. Funny how they only shut down some protests now, isn't it? Here next, one that's painfully obvious. Big Brother has the tools and the know-how to manufacture terrorist attacks, or when necessary, as now, just to let the terrorists in by the, well, millions at least, and then groom them, send them, relocate them, equip them for whatever it is that they've got planned. This includes targeting vulnerable individuals, notes Whitehead, feeding them with propaganda, know-how, and weapons intended to turn them into terrorists, if they don't already come in as terrorists for some foreign nation, gang, or cartel, and then arrest them when they feel like it as part of an elaborately orchestrated counterterrorism sting. Then there's this one. The government has the tools and the know-how to manufacture propaganda. Gee, do you think? Aimed at mind control and psyops or psychological warfare. Not long ago, the Pentagon was compelled to order a sweeping review of its clandestine U.S. psychological warfare ops or psyops conducted through social media platforms. The investigation came in response to reports suggesting, can you imagine this, that the U.S. military had been creating bogus persons with AI-generated profile pictures and fictitious media sites on things like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram in order to, who could have thought it, manipulate social media users. Of the many weapons in Big Brother's vast arsenal, psyops or psychological warfare can take many forms, from mind control experiments, behavioral nudging, propaganda, to, of course, the ever popular and still increasing media twisting and election rigging. In fact, the CIA is known to have spent nearly $20 million on its MKUltra program, back when that was real money, reportedly as a means of programming people to carry out assassinations and, to a lesser degree, inducing anxieties and erasing memories before it was allegedly, and do we even believe this for a second, shut down. Or at least it got a new code name and another, more secret level of clearance required to see what was going on. We must never forget, says Whitehead, that the government no longer exists to serve its people, if in fact it ever did, to protect their liberties and ensure their happiness. That was back when we had a constitution, folks, and people actually thought that it really mattered. Rather, he says, we the people are the unfortunate victims of the diabolical machinations of a make-works program carried out on an epic scale whose only purpose is to keep the powers that be permanently and, of course, profitably employed. And this, he notes, is how tyranny rises and freedom falls. Almost every tyranny now being perpetrated by Big Brother, the once U.S. government, against its citizenry, purportedly to keep us safe and the nation secure, yeah, sure, has come about as a result of some threat manufactured in one way or another by what was once our very own government. Think about it. You've heard the terms cyber warfare, terrorism, biochemical attacks, the nuclear arms race, surveillance, the drug wars, domestic extremism, white supremacism, the only kind of actual racism that's even allowed to be admitted, and of course, the COVID-1984 plandemic. And in almost every instance, says Whitehead, Big Brother, the U.S. government, has in its typical Machiavellian fashion sown the seeds of terror, both domestically and internationally, in order to expand its own totalitarian powers. Consider, he adds, that this very same government has taken every single bit of technology sold to us as being in our own best interest, GPS devices, surveillance, non-lethal weapons, you name it, and instead used it against us to track, trap, and control us. Are you getting the picture yet? Big Brother isn't protecting us from threats to our freedoms. The U.S. government is creating the threats to our freedoms. And it's telling that in that movie, Leave the World Behind, before disaster strikes, the main characters, on their way to a family vacation, are utterly oblivious, connected to their electronic devices and insulated from each other, as well as the world around them. And adding to the disconnect, the family's teen daughter, Rose, is fixated on binge-watching episodes of Friends, even as the world falls apart around them. As TV critic Jen Chaney explains, the sitcom's presence in the story, quote, underlines how human beings crave escapism at the expense of embracing the actual present, a different way of leaving the world behind. We're in a similar escapist bubble, says Whitehead, suffering from a crisis of the now, which keeps us distracted, deluded, amused, and insulated from reality. Which is more than a bit ironic, folks, since it's that reality that is intended to take everything you have and ultimately destroy you. So I guess it turns out, as usual, that the real reality is a thing we ought to be paying a lot more attention to. And we've been given all the information we need on that score for quite a while now, if only we would read the book. Thanks for being with us, folks, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.